Accession number 14589, Real 1.
Brigadier Smith, Real 1. When and how did you become a Gurkha officer, please?
Became a Gurkha officer in the Second World War. I was at a school nearby called All Hallows, and I applied to join the Royal Air Force. It was after the Battle of Britain, and all the vacancies had been taken, we were told. We had to wait for another year. My headmaster had been in the Gurkhas in the First World War, and he advised me to go and join them. I didn't know what Gurkhas were, where they came from, or anything else. But he reckoned that he had about 3 or 4 years of very happy service with them, and I thought, well, if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. So I went out as a cadet to the Indian Army, did my cadet training at Bangalore. When we finished it, we were asked what regiment we wanted to go to. Nearly all my contemporaries there had Indian Army connections, fathers, grandfathers, a lot. I put down the 7th Gurkha Rifles purely because my headmaster had been in the 7th Gurkha Rifles. I was duly marched up before a brigadier, a commandant, and he said, why have you chosen 7th Gurkha Rifles? And I said, I have no family connections, I've only got my headmaster. He thought that was quite a joke, and to my surprise, and to the surprise of some of my contemporaries who didn't get their choices, I did get the 7th Gurkha Rifles. So that was in the end of 1942. I did about a year in the training centre in North India, in a place called Palampur. Most of us then thought we were going to Burma, because the 7th Gurkhas had 2 battalions in Burma, 1 battalion in the Middle East. And just as we were about to join one of the battalions in Burma, the 2nd battalion in the Middle East was captured almost entirely, apart from casualties killed in battle, in Tobruk. And although the whole battalion had been captured, to, I think, everybody's surprise, permission was given to re-raise that battalion in the Second World War. That's not very common, that sort of thing. And as a result of that, we were asked at the centre to send out young officers in a hurry, and I went out and joined the 2nd 7th Gurkhas, who were then in Palestine doing mountain warfare training.
Can you tell me about the composition of the 2nd 7th Gurkhas, please? Where the men came from and what they were like?
They were all from East Nepal. The 7th and the 10th Gurkha Rifles in the old Indian Army Brigade, and indeed in the British Army Brigade of Gurkhas, in the main came from 2 tribes in the East, the Rais and the Limbus. They were, in the main, the men were under 20, uneducated. Many of them had lied about their ages and said they were 18. They were probably nearer 16 or 17. Their enthusiasm was incredible when you consider that they were fighting for a king emperor over the seas who they'd never seen. None of them had been out of their own country before, let alone crossed the seas to England or Europe. They were all volunteers. There wasn't a single pressed man among them. And when you consider that by the end of the Second World War, over 250,000 Gurkhas were serving the King Emperor in one theatre or another, 250,000, and the population in Nepal then was probably in the region of about 9 million. That is quite incredible, when the most important fact to remember there is that Nepal was not part of the British Empire, never had been, and has always been independent for hundreds of years.
What do you think was their real motivation? Was it because of loyalty to the Gurkha regiment, or was it loyalty to the King Emperor or to Britain, or just because they had liked to fight?
I think a mixture of all those. There is a military tradition in most of the villages. Father, grandfather, great-grandfather, usually going to the same regiment. So there is that very important thing. Secondly, certainly in Nepal in those days, there was not enough work in the farm for two or three sons. So if there were two or three sons, the father and mother were very keen that the younger sons went off and joined either the Indian Army or some other foreign army. So there was that aspect as well. And also the fact that they had, in one theatre or another, served the British since 1815. So it's a mixture of things.
What was their attitude towards you and the other young British officers?
Well, I think we were all babies together when I think about it now. Because Nepal then was a forbidden country to foreigners, only a very small handful of foreigners were in Kathmandu. Otherwise, there were no tourists. They knew nothing about the Europeans, really. And so their first sight were these young British officers. And I think for quite a time they felt that we could do no wrong. However, they soon became disillusioned, I think. But we all grew up together, in war particularly, and we grew up quickly.
Now, I interrupted your narrative with you going out to Europe. Can you pick it up again, please?
We went out to Europe. The battalion was in Palestine doing rock climbing. I may say that the Gurkhas were incredibly good at rock climbing. They were often better than their British instructors because they'd lived in the Himalayas. They'd lived at 4,000 or 5,000 feet. Heights never worried them. Then we went to Cedars of the Lebanon and we began skiing training. The whole idea then was that the battalion would go into Yugoslavia to help Tito. And we were on a mountain warfare establishment. We were given mountain warfare equipment, at least a platoon of Gurkhas, and once some of the British officers did some skiing. Their results were excellent. There was no fancy skiing, of course. It was a question of going from A to B with a rucksack on your back. And we were all rather looking forward to this trip into Yugoslavia. Just as well we didn't go, I think, in the end. When, without any warning at all, the 4th Indian Division, who were moving to Italy, asked for the 2nd 7th to come back and rejoin them because the original battalion had been in the 4th Indian Division. And we were disappointed, actually. We had to hand in all our skiing equipment and fancy equipment we had. We had too many young British officers because we were on a different establishment when we were going into, or when we proposed we were going to Yugoslavia. But nevertheless, we went off and landed in Italy and joined the 4th Indian Division.
How soon did you get into action?
I was one of the young officers left out of action when the battalion moved up to Cassino. About six of us were left out. We were all very disappointed. The commanding officer told us that we'd soon be up there because he'd already had raid communiques from Cassino and knew the fighting was pretty tough. However, we didn't really believe him in our innocence. But he was right. Within the month, all of us had joined the battalion to replace casualties in Cassino. So I only had about 3 weeks before I was back in the battalion.
So you did get into some fighting at Cassino?
Yes. I was in A Company, and we did about 18 days in the front line. The worst period we had was when we as a company were detached from the battalion and put under command of the 1st 4th Essex, who were holding a feature called Castle Hill. And we had to move down and through the battered town of Cassino and join the Essex, ostensibly to do another attempt at the monastery. But fortunately, the company commander of the Essex, who was holding the castle, put his foot down. He'd already seen several forlorn efforts going off and other troops coming back with heavy casualties, and he felt that we'd be much better used to him staying there because he was under considerable pressure from the German paratroopers. So we saw the bulk of our action in and around Castle Hill, just above the town of Cosino.
What did the action consist in? Patrolling?
Well, it was patrolling, yes, and later holding defensive positions, because the Germans tried to come down and cut off Castle Hill from the rest of the forces. So we were holding the line, if that's the right word. But there was no such thing as a line in Cosino, of course. It was a most haphazard battle. First War, Hitler called it the First World War battle fought with Second World War weapons, and I think Hitler's description was extremely accurate.
What were the German tactics when they attacked you?
Well, I think they appreciated that if they were going to prevent any attack on the monastery through Castle Hill up to the abbey itself, they had to cut the lifeline of supplies. So they were trying to infiltrate and cut off the supplies. I ought to mention that the first 9th Gurkhas, who had gone up towards the monastery one night and had seized a feature called Hangman's Hill, only a matter of yards from the abbey, and they were cut off, and so our attempts had been made to try and get them supplies through, etc. Eventually the 1st 9th Gurkhas had to be withdrawn, and they had very heavy casualties while they held Hangman's Hill for about 9 days, as far as I remember.
What was your opinion of the quality of the German enemy there?
Well, I don't think many troops in the world would have withstood the bombardment and the bombing that the Allies inflicted on Cosino town and on the abbey itself. When the abbey was bombed, one felt, watching it from a distance, that no one could have survived and fight afterwards, but they did. And the German paratroopers were, no question about it, were high-class troops. And although I won't say there was any friendship between any of us, there was a lot of respect.
How did your own Gurkhas perform?
Patchy, really. Gurkhas' forte is to attack. They're expert at night patrolling, expert at night attacks. They like to get up an atom. I've always said that if you offered me troops for a certain aspect of warfare, I'd choose British troops for defence, Gurkha troops for a night attack, and possibly Indian troops for a day advance. Because in the 4th Indian Division, in each brigade, we had one British, one Indian, and one Gurkha battalion. And it was quite interesting, as the campaign continued after Cosino, that the three brigade commanders tended to use their battalions in those sort of roles. British soldiers can get bloody-minded in defence, curse and blind, but they'll stick it out. Gurkhas won't necessarily run away, I'm not inferring that, but their morale went down at Cosino. They were being hit by mortars, by shelling, etc., and they couldn't really hit back at the enemy, in their opinion. So by the time we pulled out of Cosino, they'd certainly had enough. Their morale soon improved, and we went to the Adriatic front, where for about a month it was patrolling, probing, fighting patrols, and they were again superb in that role.
Which did you prefer yourself, the Adriatic front or Cosino?
Well, I don't think anyone could prefer Cosino. It was very difficult to describe. I kept a diary at the time, the only time I kept a diary, which you've got in your museum, incidentally. And I think the thing about Cosino is that the noise never stopped, 24 hours a day. Both sides had concentrated considerable number of guns and mortars in a relatively small area. And so sleep was very difficult. Most aspects of fighting and living, revictualling, were done at night, because Germans had complete observation over most of the battlefield, having holding the abbey, whereas we had complete air superiority. So it was very difficult for either side to do anything during the day, but everything came alive at night. So anyone thought of sleeping at night was almost impossible.
And what was the character of the fighting on the
Adriatic side?
Well, for the month we were there, it was trying to deceive the Germans into thinking that at least two divisions held the Adriatic front. In fact, we were only one, that was the 4th Indian Division. The whole idea was that the other divisions were being moved in secret across Italy prior to the 4th Battle of Cassino, which was the one that eventually won the day. So while the regrouping of these divisions was going on, we, the 4th Indian Division, had to carry out a lot of activity to try and deceive the Germans into thinking that there were at least two divisions there. Whether we did so or not, I don't know. But in the main, we were patrolling just about every night. And because it was a very difficult job to coordinate all these patrols, each battalion formed a patrol platoon of special volunteers. And I actually commanded our battalion patrol platoon. And we tended to take on the longer range patrols. And I, as the patrol commander, had also to coordinate with brigade patrols from other units going out so there was no clash. It was a busy time, and certainly when I commanded the patrol platoon for about 3 weeks, I just about had enough. I found at the end that I was not sleeping, and I was obviously overtaxing myself.
Going back to what you said about the difference between the Gurkhas and the Indian battalions in night and day attacks, why should there have been a difference?
Well, I think that the Indian battalions tended to be slightly better educated then. I don't say they are now, but they certainly were probably then. And it was probably easier to give them specific tasks in day. I don't think the Indian troops like night fighting very much. That's a generalisation, which is always suspect, of course, because I'm sure friends of mine who serve the Indian battalions could refute my argument. But that's just my own personal opinion.
How did your time in Italy come to an end?
Well, we moved up to fight on the Arezzo front, where I took over a company for the first time and commanded it for about a week in action. It was a tough initiation, but when we came out of the action, we were in a place called Lake Trasimene, and the real company commander, if that's the way to put it, came back from hospital, so I handed back the company to him. About 2 weeks later, we moved up for what they called the Battle of the Gothic Line, which was supposed to get us into the Po Valley and through the mountains into Austria by Christmas. That was the idea. Well, that's the idea that was put across to us by the senior generals. Again, I had no specific job when the Gothic Line began, but the company commander who'd come back to take over from me and C Company attended an O group and got in his jeep, reversed it in a hurry, and went into a deep ditch, hurt his back, had to go to hospital, and again I took over his company, C Company, one I'd commanded before. And 2 days later, there was a tough action around a village called Tavoletto, which my company and with assistance from A Company managed to take after a night's battle. But my war ended there in Italy because I was hit in the left leg and evacuated. So I didn't rejoin the battalion again until they were moving to Greece.
Why was the battle for Tavoletto so difficult?
Well, I think for many reasons. First of all, Tavoletto village was on the top of a ridge which commanded the Adriatic plain below, and the Germans, quite rightly, were using it as an excellent OP, and from there their artillery and mortar fire was inflicting a lot of casualties on the Allied troops trying to get up on the plain. So its importance was such that the higher-ups were saying to my colonel, though I didn't realise at the time, take Tavoletto at once, if not sooner. So the first attack he put in was ill-planned, and it entailed three companies doing a giant left hook through country they had not reconnoitred. Little was known about where the Germans were. That their whole idea was they'd do a left hook, get in behind the village, cut it off, and then the fourth company, the one I was commanding, was going to go in with tanks the following morning. Well, those three companies set off all right at 8 o'clock in the evening, but they ran into trouble very quickly, and by midnight they were well away to the west. And in fact, my company, which should have been the furthest away from Tavoletto, according to the plan, found itself sitting very near Tavoletto, and we were the obvious company to try and take it when the next attack went in. So when we went in, it was a question of trying to take a defended village at night. We couldn't use armour at night to help us, so that made it difficult. And the confusion from the time we attacked, which was midnight, until first light next day was considerable. I'm sure that some Gurkhas killed Gurkhas and Germans killed Germans. It was a nightmare, really. But in the end, we won the day, I think. Next morning, the village was full of dead or wounded Germans and Gurkhas. And another company came in with tanks and finished it off.
How did you come to be wounded yourself? Can you describe it?
I was following the leading, the reserve platoon. I start from the beginning. We were supposed to go in at midnight after a very heavy barrage from the Corps artillery, which was, the whole village seemed to disrupt in front of our eyes. And again, if one hadn't been at Cassino, one would have thought that no man could have survived that attack, but having seen what happened at Cassino, we were not quite so optimistic as that. I couldn't get my two leading platoons to move very quickly or readily off the start line. Their morale was pretty low. They'd already been sitting under Tavoletto for nearly 2 days. We hadn't had any food or sleep. And I don't think they had a lot of faith in the plan, and I didn't have much faith either. But I managed to get them moving by shouting something at them in Gorkhale. It's better to die than be a coward. That's one of their mottos. And one of the platoon commanders took this cry up, and instead of them moving off at measured tread as they should have done, as I'd ordered them to, they went in at full speed. So having lost control for the moment, any of the two leading platoons, I was keen to keep control of the third platoon, and I was leading them behind when we were passing a farmhouse and a German sniper, I suppose, from the window opened fire and hit me in the leg. I think he thought he'd killed me, and he leant out, I think, to see what had happened, and during that time I was able to hit him. Luckily, my wound was only a flesh one, although at the time it was very difficult to see in the dark. And having had it bound up by my orderly and one of the other Gurkhas, I hobbled my way into Tavoletto to try and regain control of a situation which by then was almost beyond control. And it was a very, very difficult night, one that I won't forget.
Now, can you tell me how you came to go to Greece, please?
The 4th Indian Division was pulled out of the North Italy, I suppose, about November, and we were told we were going to Greece. We knew nothing about the situation in Greece at all then. We thought it was almost going to be a rescue after Italy. We embarked and sailed in various ships across to Greece. It was only when we reached Patras, which is in the Peloponnese, that our colonel, who'd flown ahead, came aboard and told us that there was no question of a rescue, that we were up against the Elas, the communists, who were entrenched all around Patras in great numbers. And we were then told that we had to not provoke them, and that there was no question of us trying to take any action against them until we had more reinforcements. This was early December 1944, and we had about 3 weeks of extreme tension in Patras. They outnumbered us by about 4-1, I imagine, and they strutted around the streets and flaunted their numbers. But we lived in uneasy peace for about 3 to 4 weeks. Our brigade commander was John Hunt, later to be Sir John on the Everest, now Lord Hunt, and he did an extremely good job. Every day seeing the Elas commanders and persuading them not to take any action until the fighting in Athens went one way or the other. Well, Elas thought they were going to win in Athens. They very nearly did, incidentally. It was touch and go for about 2 weeks. But as soon as we, the British, won in Athens, overnight, troops and tanks were brought from Athens to Patras, and as soon as they appeared in the bay, John Hunt then turned round to the Elas commander and said, right, I give you 24 hours to move out beyond a certain line, and then we're going to start belligerent action. The perfidious Albion, I think. Anyway, that is what happened. Some of the Elas didn't withdraw, and my battalion had a brush with them at a place called Klaus, which is a wine industry, a wine factory. There were casualties, very few on our side, and we captured a lot of Elas. Thereafter, they began laying down their arms, and we had to patrol into the villages and the mountains to make sure they did.
What did that clash at Klaus consist of?
It was, again, the company that I'd been with in Italy, C Company, but I wasn't commanding it. In fact, I went with them on that march during the night to test my leg out, but there was a company commander who was commanding them. One of our platoons did get cut off. They were commanded by a Gurkha Naik corporal,